refractive bands, you know, right above the in the troposphere. But for all intents and purposes, except for the weird weather pattern effects, it's more a matter of free path loss is greater as you go up in frequency. So 2 meter foot per foot will attenuate at a slightly slower rate than 70 centimeters. But they're all kind of the same point-to-point propagation conditions. This slight attenuation absorptions for different materials, but the difference is kind of really minuscule as far as I'm aware. You'll have sort of about the same reach with 70 as 2, but I mean on a theoretical basis, you do get more theoretical attenuation with a higher frequency signal like 70 centimeters compared to 2 meters.
Understood and appreciated. Thank you so much for letting me know that. Something I also wanted to just throw out there for a quick second, just to let you know that when I first called my ham radio, you were the very first person I heard on ham radio. So thank you for running the test net.
Oh, really? When was that?
That was back in November, this past November. My sister gave me some HTs for Christmas. I had just finished visiting her, so she gave me my HTs as a early Christmas gift. And so I found Repeater Book online and was listening in on the repeater before I even got my license. And it was the first signal I picked up.
Ah, very good. I'm glad to hear that. I hope you're enjoying yourself in the hobby. There's so many different things you can do that, almost there's a problem figuring out where to begin.
Well, the go-to, it involves duck in the morning, but I'm definitely enjoying myself and hoping to at some point manage to make anything that vaguely resembles headway on HF, but that's the topic of a time. Thank you for verifying that what I thought was the case was in fact the case. So again, thank you for that, KETVNR there.
Okay, very good. Thank you for participating, and you know where to find us if you need us. Once again, AC2GS here. Name's Roy, and this is the Limark Technical Net. Anyone has any technical comments, questions, topics for discussion, feel free, hit that push to talk.
Ray, any recommendations on getting your ham license general online? Seemingly don't have the time to get out and take a test to the new license, but listen to you guys all the time. I'm really curious what you have to think about.
Yeah, nowadays online is nothing special. In the old days, pretty much only you could only get away with that in Alaska because of the incredibly low population density there. You know, they just couldn't figure out a way to get three hams and a tester, taking the exam together in the same location. Nowadays, if you just Google online general exams, I think it's called Ham Radio Exams or something, they have running sessions of VE sessions every day, morning, afternoon, evening, in the middle of the night, you could probably do it. They're a little bit on the paranoid side, which I guess is a good thing. They require you to have cameras available. They want to see you taking the test. They want you to be able to use your cell phone to kind of go around in the room to make sure that there's no one in the room with you helping you. And although they're a little paranoid, you can set it up on demand. You don't have to make an appointment. You can just kind of find one that's about to start any minute and jump right in. So if you don't mind slight paranoia and being able to use both the computer in your desktop or laptop and your cell phone to give them a better image of what's going on, it seems like a very good way of getting your license.
Thanks. I really appreciate your your insight. I will definitely talk to you soon once I pass the test and get my call sign. We'll see you again the rest of the time. Thank you.
Okay. Once again, AC2GS here, and we're still open for business. If anyone out there has any questions or comments or topics that they'd like to roll around, please feel free. Hopefully science and amateur radio related, of course. We, you know, could have to discuss religious differences and such, or God forbid, politics or even economics. Anyway, anyone out there with any questions, comments, or topics, please hit that push to talk and ID yourselves and ask. Okay, if, you know, if we're going to have a short day, a short net tonight. I, you know, don't need to run until 10:15. It would be nice, but don't need to. Once again, though, I will give people, you know, another opportunity. If you have any questions or comments or topics for tonight's technical net, please hit that push to talk.
B2BFF, how
are
you doing, Roy?
I'm doing fine, Frank. How are you?
Doing well. Just kind of going through my clothes for a wedding I'm going to next weekend, probably Labor Day weekend, as I'm listening to this. Anyway, what was I going to say? My understanding in terms of, if I remember correctly from some of the discussions way back in the old days with, you know, here on the net, that tropo in some cases is actually more pronounced and starts first on the higher frequencies and works its way down to 2 meters and 6 meters. So I think generally you're right that as you go up, it tends to be more line of sight. So 440, 70 centimeters, I think I remember reading it supposedly works better inside buildings in urban areas, and that's why it became more popular with the first responder community. Go ahead.
Well, it's difficult to say for sure, but because everything has so many different variables, I think one of the really important ones is the bandwidth of the 70-centimeter band as opposed to the 2-meter band. It's much more narrow, 2 meters, and so you have a lot of opportunities, specialty band areas on 70 that you wouldn't have for 2 meters.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, as you go up the frequency, you have more space, and the bands become wider, and that's probably true both for commercial and for amateur radio. Of course, the competition for frequencies has become more keen over the years. But go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, like I said before, there's a lot of variables that people take consideration of. The free path loss is greater as you go up in frequency, I think, by the square or the cube, I forget. But the extent that it's demonstrated in real life is not really that big. You're not going to notice an amazing difference in the range of 2 meters to 70 centimeters. We haven't experienced it and haven't heard anyone really comment on it in all these years. So although on a theoretical basis you do have that attenuation difference, it's not significant enough in real life to warrant, you know, considering it strongly in the argument of which band to go to.
I guess the other difference is that you get more gain with smaller antennas as you go up. I haven't looked into this at all, but I suspect you can have a 9 or easily do a 9 or 12 dB gain collinear on 440 on, or 1296, that you can't easily do with a relatively small antenna, say, on 2 meters. So that also impacts repeater coverage, I would think, if we're talking about FM also. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's a more a mechanical aspect with all these things. But again, when it gets down to 2 meters, I don't think there's that much of a difference in people's using collinear antennas. You know, they'll use them for 2 meters almost as much as they'll use them for 70. So, and I'm always suspicious of gain figures. You know, QST will not publish gain figures for good reason that they've discovered. But usually those numbers are calculated by the marketing department, not the engineering department.
Well, yeah, you know, engineers want numbers that are right. Marketers are happy with numbers that can't easily be proved wrong. I think that's probably a good way to put it from a business point of view. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, but they also have different motivations. Marketing's motivation is to sell products. Engineering's is to design products.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is something that's probably discussed forever. I mean, engineers design products, but ultimately they're the design products that will sell. There are all kinds of cool things you can design that just... and all kinds of cool things that have been designed that fail in the marketplace because the marketers can't sell them and customers won't buy them for whatever reason.
Well, yeah, I mean, startup companies are full of all these guys who have a cool idea that no one wants. It's very difficult to convince a well-motivated engineer that although it's an interesting design, it might be a clever design, it's not solving anyone's problem. And so what a lot of times is done is marketing will present you a solution to a problem you don't have, which is a death knell. Now, sometimes they get away with it. Way back in the late 70s when someone thought it would be a clever idea to overcharge for bottled water, I would imagine the average person would say that's a stupid idea, and yet now it's a multi-billion dollar scam going on. A lot of times these bottled waters turn out to be tap water run through a filter.
Yeah, I have some of that bottled water in the house here. It is convenient, but, yeah, it's sometimes hard to tell the difference between that and the tap water. Anyway, yeah, I just wanted to jump in between Lonely Berry to get back to what we're doing here, picking out our clothes to wear next week. Be listening, probably try to jump in for the space report a bit later. WB2BX.
Okie dokie, Frank, thank you as always for your participation in these nets. I appreciate it. Once again, I'm still Roy, still AC2GS, and this is still the Weimark Technical Net. If anyone out there has any questions or comments or topics for discussion for tonight, feel free to hit that push to talk.
AF2B with a possible topic.
Sure, Ed. What do you got for me?
Well, it's been my experience that on some occasions I have done some troubleshooting on a particular device and absolutely know what the problem is or the cure is. But I'm looking for a clearinghouse where if somebody needs the information, I could post it. Now, just as an example, I have a Texon radio, which has a super cap in it, and when the super cap goes bad, there's a particular symptom, you can't get the display to work, yada, yada, yada. Well, a guy went crazy trying to find it about 5 years ago, which it was something I had already found. And had there been a clearinghouse, I could have said, hey, check the supercap. And I'm wondering, is there a clearinghouse, if you know what I mean, for that kind of symptomatic information?
Well, unfortunately, it sort of depends upon the kindness of others. I mean, theoretically, what you're really talking about computer-wise is forums. IO has a large number of different forums for different models of radio, different watchers, all kinds of equipment. If you go to the IO forum, Limark also has a forum on IO. So if you go to those forums, you might find a forum that is dedicated for that brand, and within that that forum brand, you could do a local search and discover the answer. If it got through Google search, it might be findable just by Google alone if you know the best keywords to offer it. So primarily you're talking about a forum. I mean, it's also, there are forum-like things on the Internet. There's Reddit, which is a large group of people who kind of talk about all kinds of topics, and there are many pages of many different types of topics. There's an amateur radio Reddit, and there's all kinds of Reddit. I find, unfortunately, that for some odd reason, Reddit users tend to be not the most polite, generally, if they could insult something. If they sense that, God forbid, you're older than 30 years old, you're in trouble with these guys, because they're sort of, unfortunately, ageist, you know, guys. But so I would sort of not bother with Reddit personally, but that's just a bias on my part. But I certainly would kind of look at the IO forums and see if there's one dedicated for that company, and then do a search. And if not, be a nice guy and put an entry if that forum exists there, so that eventually Google will run through it with their robots, and it'll be available for other people in the future who do a Google search.
Thank you. Well, that makes sense.
In our comment?
I'm thinking maybe with AI, there could be one repository for everything. Medical, woodworking, knitting, sewing, whatever. And the AI would go in there and find stuff that's applicable and put pointers on the proper form. But I guess I'm dreaming. But thank you, Roy. The forms is a good answer.
Yeah, I mean, at the very least, if you find a forum that's appropriate, be a nice guy and put your entry there. It may simply be that people who discovered it never thought of leaving it in an open, available forum. So, you can start it going by yourself.
A2E in our comment?
Certainly.
KE2ENR, forum.qrz.com, with the same place where we have our logbooks and all those other ham radio elements, there's a dedicated forum section of QRZ that you may want to look into that is more general, that isn't specific to any particular radio. There's a whole lot of the forums and other specialty areas, so I love the desire to provide for the community, and the QRZ forums are indexed by Google regularly, so that would probably be the best place to start, especially if there's already a QRZ page for this person. Back to that.
Okay, yeah. I mean, there are a lot of different forums. Forum software was very, very popular about 5-10 years ago, and unfortunately, like all things, they kind of consolidated, and small companies were bought up by big companies, And the forum software isn't quite what it once was, but, you know, there's still a lot of forums available. So, yeah, I mean, you could do searches for amateur radio forums, and you'll come up with probably more than just QRZ and .io. And again, I think the kind of important thing, lesson to be learned is if unfortunately no one left any kind of entry on this particular subject that you're aware of, you know, start the ball rolling and leave your own so that eventually Google will run through it and make it searchable. And so, you know, they might not see other entries that never were, but they'll see yours. So, you know, you're part of the solution as well.
Thank you very much, JF2P.
Okie doke. Thank you, Ed, as always, for your participation. We're still open for business. If anyone has any further questions, comments, or topics for tonight, please feel free to hit that push to talk.
November 2, Victor Hotel, Zulu Mobile.
Ah, long time no here. How you doing?
Yeah, I couldn't wait to hear your beautiful voice again. I've been listening diligently on 10 meters, but it's just not there, you know? Question, how is the net going on 10 meters? Are you getting a lot of DX? Because I don't hear anything. You know, the bandwidth has been dead for months. And I'm doing well. Thank you for asking. And then my second question is, how are you doing? Back to you.
I'm doing fine, Ken. Let's see. It's you know, 10 meters is terrible. 10 meters, it looks like, you know, a couple of miles of Texas land, flat as anything. There's no activity going on at all. Usually, through some random chance luck, on Sunday mornings, I talk to one person out of the state. Otherwise, it's all Brooklyn and Queens and maybe Manhattan. But, I mean, we had two distant contacts this day. We had one distant contact the last time I was on 10 meters. I'm hoping that things get a lot better as the weather turns to fall and this damn geomagnetic storm starts to disappear on us. And kind of it gives us an opportunity to kind of form the F1 and F2 layer that's being beaten senseless by the geomagnetic storms.
Well, thank you for summing that all up correctly. Yes, I feel like I'm all alone out here, banging my head against the wall sometimes. Yeah, it's making me want to go back to the digital mode, which I don't want to do. I want to keep my, you know, use my microphone and not have to go digital. But I may go touch on, like, Whisper or FT8 again a little bit. But horrible, horrible, horrible out here. Nothing on most of the low bands. But thank you for that. And I was in a few contests for VHF. Hopefully, I was thinking it was going to pick up and made about half a dozen stations. Got QSO with half a dozen stations, which is nothing. So it's terrible every direction, you know. And wanted to say hi, and I'll leave it at that. And I'll be listening. Thank you. This is N2VHC's Mobile. Back to you.
AC2GS. Well, thank you, Ken. Glad to hear you once again. I've missed you on 10 meters. I've missed a lot of distant communications on 10 meters this summer and spring. But, you know, before you know it, it'll be fall. And it came back last year. It came back the year before when fall hit. So I'm guardedly optimistic that we'll be talking together again on 10 meters in probably only a couple of weeks to go.
Thank you for the optimism. Okay. And hello, everybody in Long Island and the surrounding areas and the five boroughs, Jersey. Yep, I'm good. And I'm retired, like you all know, and I'm just hanging out, you know, and raising my two kids. Okay. And hello to everybody from Nebraska. We're still here. I think I'm the only guy in Nebraska that has a radio, right? Well, they have them, but they don't talk on them. They're not really good conversationalists out here, huh? I brought that skill with me out here, but They weren't born with it out here like we are. Okay. Back to net control.
Okay, Ken. Yeah, I was just discussing you on the 10-meter net this morning. Someone brought up the idea of UHF and VHF activity. They were talking about how they go on the road and they talk to all kinds of interesting people. And I told them that we have one regular on the 10-meter net who, unfortunately, in Nebraska, doesn't find that many people locally to chat with on UHF and VHF. So I don't know why they like that. I think part of it, unfortunately, is just the low population density to begin with, and then the low amateur radio density in the Midwest. You know, you go down to the West Coast, and it seems like every third guy is a ham. They're running through those call signs like nobody's business. But you go away from the West Coast, and everything sort of slows down. So I hope you find people to talk to locally. But again, I'm the skeptic of this net, and I'm optimistic that we're going to get some significant improvements in propagation as soon as the fall weather kicks in.
Aye. Let's see. Yeah, the conversation skills have much to they're not sociable people out here, believe it or not, until you get right in front of them. That's the problem. You know, it's figured out, you know. You can't help it, but that's why ham radio is not popular. Distances, they don't see any value in it. You know, they don't know what to talk about. They have nobody to talk to. Even on HF, they don't know how to strike up. Most of the people don't know how to strike up a conversation. They're not very technically oriented with the hot. So a lot of them are more machine oriented with as far as implements, you know, farm implements and things down in the countryside, you know, things like that. As far as the technical jargon and the mentality, it's a little different. It goes in a different direction with machinery. And I guess you can have a good conversation about that, but they don't have the patience to, I don't know. I've busted the license dozens and dozens of people with ham radio out here, and I've not heard one of them on the air. And many of them have gotten to extra class, believe it or not. They have the capability, but they just don't, they have the dream, but not the drive. And then we got commercial license. I'm licensed, and I'm not lying when I tell you this, over 100 commercial licenses, GROL, because it's an increase, it's a bump in their salary where I used to work at the railroad. And they enjoy that, but as far as, technical knowledge after that, they have to gain it on their own, and none of them go to a ham. None of the radio guys at the railroad that I know have gone to ham radio. So it's a very limited, hobby out here. Back to you.
Okay, Ken. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of disappointing and sad. Yeah, no one has to inherently be a great conversationalist. And I've heard more than enough of guys discussing either what the weather is or what they had for lunch. Whatever they're interested in, so be it. Not everything could be a discussion of quantum mechanics. I understand that. I appreciate that. As far as technical knowledge, that's probably why there's such a high density on the West Coast, because I think there's more aerospace and engineering companies on the West Coast than there is across the rest of the United States. In these days, back in the 50s and the 60s, Long Island was a center hub for that type of stuff. And, all of our great, clever, smart electrical engineer hams that have taught us through all the years came from that source material. But unfortunately, now that's just the West Coast. There's not much kicking around on the East Coast. But, what can you do? Be thankful for HF. At least you can get away from Nebraska if you have to. And talk to us here in Brooklyn and guys in Long Island and guys on the other side of the coast.
a relief. You know, I'm the only act. Well, I had there were two of us that were active in the grid square that I live in, DN82, Delta November 82. Believe it or not, I came from FN20, FN21, and there were thousands of active hams on 6 meters, 2 meters, on VHF in those grid squares during the contest. It was ridiculous on a VHF contest, you know. And I move out here, and I move to different places, and this is here is one of them. And there's only two of us that are active in the grid square on VHF, and we were both active on 6 meters. I couldn't hear him; he was too far away, and he couldn't hear me. But I could hear stations working him. But I made it where I met him one day, and we became great friends. Antennas fell down. He never put them back up. So I became the only active operator on 6 meters in the grid square. Can you believe it? That's how, barren and very rural it is out here. So when the bands open up, people jump all over me on 6 meters when the propagation opens up. So it's bad most of the time, but when it's good, it's really good, you know, being the only operator out here. So it has its pluses and minuses. Back to you.
Yeah, I understand. It's nice to be a rarity when everyone's searching for you, but it's not good to be a rarity when you're by yourself. So I wish I had better suggestions, but just hold off for a little bit longer, and I think the 10 meters is going to open up wide in a couple of weeks, you know, at least, you know, mid-September time. We'll see how things go. We'll see what my prediction powers are, if I should coin myself as the next Nostradamus.
Yeah, that's interesting. Every year it goes around and around. Winter time comes, fall and winter and so forth. All I have is noise right now. Hopefully that'll die out for a little while, and then we'll get some signals that'll go above the noise. It'd be very quiet. I liked when I lived on the Indian reservation. That was very good. For some reason, I don't know if it was a certain latitude I was at or it was just Indian magic. It was the blessed land of the Lakota. It propagated my signal very well. I don't know. But I moved back down here 80 miles south, just 80 miles south. And I lost everything, it seems like. But, we'll see. But, okay, thanks for the nice words. Back to you.
You're welcome, Ken. Thank you for participating. I appreciate it, as always. And I look forward to us having our 10-meter conversations again real soon.
Yeah, we went through our high summer, you know, we call it that, where it was 100 degrees for about 3 days, and then it tapered off. Today we got to about 70, gets down to about 40 at night now. So we're predicting, you know, frost in the next couple weeks, and they've already gotten snow at certain latitudes, not too far from here, altitudes. We went through our tornado season now because of that extreme weather. Multitude of tornadoes going berserk over there just south of me and in, you know, close proximity because of the swings of the weather from day to night, that convection effect. But I think we've gotten through that now. And the other day we had a big hail storm with small hail, pea-sized, soft hail, but it was torrential. And that's done with, we think, for the year. We'll see. We might have one more crazy storm come through. But it's going to happen where we get frost in the next 2 weeks. And then it'll taper off to pleasant 70-degree weather for a couple of weeks. And then we'll go into winter. And they predict more snow than normal, but who knows what's going to happen. So we've got a couple more months, maybe one or two more months of pleasant weather. So that'll be nice. I haven't had to water the lawn much artificially because we've had a lot of rain this year for some reason, which is quite nice. And it's like give you the weather report out here. It hasn't been as bad as other years. quite pleasant, actually. Back to you.
Yeah, okay, very good. Glad to hear. And again, hopefully we'll be chatting again.
Okay, I'll release it, give it back to that control you, and let you throw it around, see what's going on, and I'll try to get back on if there's a, I let it slip. I had too many appointments to take care of with my children, me, and things like that, to go on the next live, Zoom conference, let you see me, what I look like. I'm not all that bad looking. Give you an idea. Maybe my dog will be there with me, and my cat. Like one of my three cats. Put him on camera. Next Zoom conference. Alright, 73. This is November 2, Victor Hotel, Zulu, in Nebraska, on Highway 2. Bye bye.
Okay, very good, Ken. Yeah, I'd love to take a look and see what you look like on a Zoom meeting. You know, the other club find it convenient to. Have a seat and show your face.
And I'm driving down a highway here that, it's two lanes, one in each direction. I'm going 75 miles an hour. There's no human beings in sight. There's no living life. There's no houses. There's no animals, there's nothing but hay bales. Big, you know, like, I don't know, drums of hay. And it's just rolling hills in every direction of green, the left and right of me for 10 miles as far as you can see. No houses, no animals, no human being. And I'm driving down a highway that's one lane in each direction with no cars. And there's a train running alongside of me. BNSF train. They run about a mile and a half long. Unless they're called the super train, save money, they connect two trains, make them 3 miles long. And they're 3 miles long with only one crew on the front. So they only go about 50 miles an hour, so I'm passing them rather quickly. That's interesting out here. It's quite lonely. There's no problem to talk on Echolink to the hand-free device, you know? Because there's absolutely nobody on the road here. It's very lonely. In the winter, it can get quite nerve-wracking because you don't know what you're going to encounter. But during the pleasant weather, it's quite nice. Towns are approximately 10 to 15 miles apart because those were called water stops. Those are where the old steam trains used to have to stop to replenish their water. And they had station masters that coordinated all that force code, railroad code, they would say. You know, but they're long gone, and these towns only have maybe 30 or 40 residents, maybe 10 houses there. And that's all you have along the route here, a little water stop town. Nothing to speak of, you know. So it's quite nice to have somebody to chat with like yourself and the other people listening. I'm going to try to enlighten them on what I see out of my windshield. Back to you.
Geez, it sounds like a strange place to a guy who was born and brought up in Brooklyn. You know, my brain is kind of set to urban, not rural. You know, maybe we should kind of get a collection and send Elon over to Nebraska. Maybe he'll find it as fascinating as Mars for pennies on the dollar.
I lived in a place in Germany, and it was weird because they had a place not too far from where I live. It was called the Ries Crater. I think it's spelled R-E-I. An overlook you could go to, which had the tower for the local repeater there. And I stand there, and you could see large crater formation in the ground. And it was told to me that, speaking of that, that a meteor hit the earth there, hence the name of the Ries meteor, and it hit that part of Germany and impacted it so hard that it threw some of the earth over to Czechoslovakia, which was really far from there, nowhere near the border. And it created a huge crater in the earth there called the Reed's Crater. And the people, in the meantime, had built churches and houses out of this light, hard stone that they found all over the place, which they later found was craters, was a meteor stone. And the astronauts that walked on the moon actually practiced over there, they said. NASA had them practice over in Germany in the Reed's Crater, because it was actually, they found an area of the actual meteor stone, and they thought it would be advantageous to them to learn how to walk on it, believe it or not, over in Germany. The Reed's Crater, it was over towards, I think it was towards the Dinkelsuhl, where that was. Back to you.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, it makes sense that they'd have the astronauts train. You know, I mean, there's businesses that actually manufacture ground soil with the consistency and chemical composition of moon soil to have astronauts test out their equipment on that stuff as well. So there's a lot of that that goes on, a lot of simulation that goes on in NASA. And sometimes people get the wrong idea of simulation versus just copying. That's where you get all these idiots who kind of say that we never went to the moon, and it was all kind of it was a movie taken by Kubrick, and then they had to kill Kubrick. Paranoia never takes a holiday.
I know what you're saying. It's a little... I know. Don't even get me started with any of that. And like with the World Trade Center conspiracies and all that. And, it's kind of crazy. You know, it's funny. I never forget that place over there. It was, they had a very beautiful setup over there. And, you know, and it was... you could stand on that overlook and you could see the entire rim of the city, which is formed in a circle, and they built a wall to keep people out back in medieval days, and formed inside the rim of that crater. And I said, that's so interesting how they worked with it, you know. And then, of course, they had no idea it was from a meteorite back then, you know. And you can look that up, anybody listening can look up the Reed's Crater. I can't remember how they built it. R-E-I-S-E or something like that. But it was in, you know, Germany. It was in Bavaria along what they call the Romantic Road, or the Romantic Straße, where they have all the beautiful castles. As you travel down the Rhine and the Main, M-A-I-N River, you see all these beautiful castles that are still there in one of those towns, you know. And it's funny how the Germans adapted to that and not knowing it, you know, of course. But, all right, very good. So here I am. We've got 7:45 here in Mountain Time. Out here, I live in Mountain Time. Back to you.
Yeah, here it's 9:45. Someone wanted to say something?
That was me, Roy.
Yeah, Paul?
I did what he said. I looked it up. Sure enough, Apollo 14 train there. So, interesting place. Very good. Back to you.
Oh, very good. Well, that's the thing about human beings. We have a lot of ingenuity. We may not know what something is, but we certainly can figure out how to make it useful for us. So, you know, human beings have looking around and seeing what they could do with all the stuff that they find. And thankfully, they spend some part of that time trying to figure out where it came from in the first place. But unfortunately, you always got the guys who think that some big ghost spoke it into reality, which is an interesting solution to the problem, but doesn't really get you any farther to other things in the universe. But I'm glad you had that kind of environment there. Yeah, I mean, Europe's a lovely place. Unfortunately, I never had the opportunity to visit. I've gone down to Mexico, but I've never kind of the continent here.
Yeah, I'm glad glad I got fact-checked. I like that. You know, it's beautiful. You know, one of the most beautiful things, I was a member of the AM radio club, a few of them over there, and they were very open and friendly to me, and we used to meet all the time and have nice times together, and we went to Friedrichshafen every year. They used to go on a bus, one of these clubs, and I would get on the bus with them. And sometimes I would drive, but the good thing about the bus is you go down there and drink beer with them and everything. But driving, you don't always have to drink beer. You can just drive down there. I drove down there, and the Friedrichshafen Hamfest is unbelievably nice. It's in it, and the funny thing about it is it's in the Zeppelin, where they built the Zeppelins, the Graf Zeppelin family built the Zeppelins on the lake that's between Switzerland and Germany. So it's, you know, and there's Zeppelin hangars, three of them are huge, and they're refurbished and they're beautiful. And they have manufacturer's equipment, and they have different stuff, and in one of them they have used equipment all over the world, and it's beautiful, and it's nice, and it's real high-level stuff, excellent, second to none. And I would go down there a couple times a year, because they had boat shows down there, and they had car shows, and they had other things, you know? Everything was held out of these Zeppelin hangars. And, you know, it was just a night environment down there in Friedrichshafen. It's down there in the bottom of Germany, and it's on the, I can't think of the name of the lake, but it's one of the main lakes in Germany where you can go right over to Switzerland. You take your passport with you, of course, you get on a ferry boat, and you go to another country. It's wonderful down there. I would say everybody once in their life should take a trip to go to Friedrichshafen Hamfest, at least. And even if you don't buy anything, just to look at all the people. I met Electric Marconi, the daughter of Marconi. She was representing the Italian Ham Radio Club. She was sitting in a throne with two bodyguards, and I didn't know who it was. And then they explained she's the daughter of Marconi, the father of ham radio. I was shocked when I heard that, and, you know, her and I had, like, a little conversation. Now that I think about it, it was funny. Back to you.
Well, that's interesting. How old was she?
Well, I would have thought she would have been old, you know, 100, but she was not that old. She was like, I would say in her 50s or something, or 60s. Or she looked, if she was older, she looked a lot younger, you know? But she's considered a princess in the Italian government, so she gets a stipend, doesn't do anything. She's called Princess Elettra, that's her first name, Marconi. So she didn't, I was in my 40s, so she didn't look much older than me. As a matter of fact, I think I seen a picture of her not too long ago somewhere. She still looks pretty good for her age. Back to you.
Ah, that's very interesting. I've read about the German amateur radio convention for years and years. It's very common to be written up in QST, and I also subscribe to the Radio Society of Great Britain's RADCOM. And they do articles on it as well. So it looks like a great convention, a lot cleaner than ours. You know, that center where Dayton was falling apart by the time that they finally quit it. And, you know, I talked to a couple of retailers that had booths there, and they, you know, they complained that they get sick every time they get home from Dayton. So it's a good thing that they retired Dayton. It was kind of embarrassing.
Yeah. I'm joking. It's first class there. They have the German direction finding truck where they go around and find people that are illegal operating for the police. They have the people that issue the ham radio licenses. I can't pronounce the word. It's a giant 26-letter word, that issue the ham radio licenses, and I was one of the few Americans that had a special call sign. because I was considered under the United States Forces, Armed Forces. So my call sign started with a D and an A, Delta Alpha, 2 Kilo Whiskey was my call sign, and they gave me KW because it was my name. So they were cool about it, and they said, you're one of a handful of hams anymore from America. So I walked up to their desk, and they said, what's your call sign? I said, DA2KW. They said, oh, Mr. Reindl, we know you very well. Every year you renew your license. You're a very good operator from America. I said, thank you. They were very pleasant, very friendly to me. You know, it was interesting, you know. And then the police were there with your direction finding equipment, you know, and all of this stuff. It was cool, you know. And then RSGB, Radio Society of Great Britain, has a huge display. They're very friendly. They give you all kinds of swag. The ARRL, they're kind of nasty and snarky. I don't like them. They act like, you know, they act nasty, you know. Even though they pay their way there, they act like, you know, like, I don't know why they act that way. But anyway, all the other people, Kuwait wouldn't talk to Iraq. Iraq wouldn't talk to Iran, you know, and it was weird. It was funny, you know. It was real nice, though. Every year, same way, though. So I enjoyed going there. It was nice. It was only about 2 hours from where I live on the Autobahn, you know. And it was pretty cool. And then what I wanted to say was, out here in Nebraska, to change subjects but not entirely, they've improved the cell phone network that they have a system called FirstNet that gives the local, you know, the first responders priority, and they have a slice of it dedicated to first responders. Well, all of the local and state police have gone off terrestrial radio and gone over to VoIP. Believe it or not, they're all going over to VoIP, like Echolink, believe it or not, for their communication. So you see all the antennas that got wiped off their cars, and they only use VHF for handheld radio to the car repeater system. But as far as long distance, they're using VoIP for emergency communication out here in Nebraska. Back to you.
Well, it's inevitable. Ultimately, the Internet's going to kind of take over everything. That was the big technological push, and I still remember it from the 90s. I used to get newspapers and such. I got on a mailing list somehow. And it was always, that year was the year of the network, and it never came, and next year was the year of the network, and it didn't come. I think they needed to have 4 or 5 years of the network before they actually got the network running. But once they have, I mean, you know, voice over IP, it does all kinds of things these days. It appears to be the technology that's going to smother everything else.
Yeah, the state trooper car used to look like a porcupine. Had low-band radios, high-band radios, UHF, VHF, all that stuff. And now all those antennas are gone. They have one little VHF antenna. They have one little UHF antenna. One UHF antenna. And the state troopers ride solo out here. And they are 100, 150 miles away from their barracks. They call them barracks, you know? And for backup, they have to use the local police to back them up. So they don't have altitude. You know, they may be 100 miles from their barracks, and they need backup. So the state, so the locals have to come. So they had, you know, they had HF antennas. Believe it or not, they had big HF antennas on their car. Like the old-fashioned days, like Mayberry RFD, you know, big old whip hanging off the bumper. One day I noticed they were stripped of everything. And I asked the state trooper, I said, hey, they're running VoIP. They run VoIP on everything because they improved cell phone coverage everywhere.
Okay, I mean, that prop,
which is amazing that they rely on that now. So that's something else, you know, just to let people know. Out here in the boondocks, they're really trying to improve everything because terrestrial radio wasn't working so good for everybody. They knew there were downfalls to it. So they just improved the infrastructure to make it supposedly bulletproof. Let's find out.
Yeah, hopefully. What kind of what generation are they using? Because unfortunately, the later generations require more tightly packed cell towers. You could get away with far less cell towers using the older generations of cell phones than the modern fifth generation. Those require to be kind of closely packed to get the kind of bandwidth that 5G offers.
I have no idea about anything. I just know that, you know, I talked to the local police one day, and they said, yeah, we went VoIP. I said, you got to be kidding me. He said, nope, so did the state police. I saw a state patrolman living right across the street, the woman, and she said, and this is going to sound funny, state trooper out here only has to have a high school diploma, and they only make $65,000 a year, so you can see what the cost of living is out here. And you make more money working at the railroad out here. Nobody wants to be a state trooper. So I spoke to her, and she said, yeah, we went for it, too. I can't believe it. I said, so what's the little antenna for? She says, for my walkie-talkie. Talk back to the car, you know. I can't believe that. But they didn't elaborate on what they were. But out here we have 5G, but my phone only goes 4G, you know. But they use it. Some places are advertising 5G, apparently. So I don't know what other people are using in the world, but we're kind of isolated. I'm surprised it even works. But this conversation that we're having wouldn't have been possible a year ago, you know, because I'm on VoIP right now, and it would have been cut off over and over and over again. They've improved in the network that much better. Back to you.
AC2GS. Yeah, I remember we were having conversations, you'd start to break up your signal, and you'd say, I'm going out of range. I'll talk to you some other time, and then about 15, 20 minutes later, you come back sometimes, sometimes not. So, yeah, I remember your cell phone kind of going in and out on you.
And this entire time, I've been driving with 75 miles an hour. I put it on cruise control, and that's the way it is. Yep, and this is the same place that had dead spots. And I've got, you know, full power on my phone. So, it's interesting, you know. It's very interesting. And that they went VoIP. I hope the network doesn't go down during a major occurrence, which it could. And I don't know what they're going to do. Because all the VHF radios are gone. So, they gave the local police gave the VHF radios over to some other agency, somewhere else in the city. But let's see what happens. Yeah, and the whole thing with the German going over to Friedrichshafen, it's well worth the trip as far as you land in Munich. Munich is not that far. It's a big airport. They really promote flying into it because it hasn't been used as much. They rebuilt the entire airport years ago, made it very beautiful. They want people to fly there instead of Frankfurt. And, you know, you fly outside the city, you get your rental car, then you fly diagonally across Germany's Friedrichshafen. A lot of people fly into Switzerland and drive up to Friedrichshafen, you know, because it's out. They couldn't get into Germany. It was cheaper to fly into Switzerland because the traffic was, the flight traffic was more economical. Because they needed people to fly in that way. So they found a cheaper flight from the United States to go into Switzerland. Nobody flies into Switzerland, apparently. No reason to, you know. There's not many things to look at there during the summer. They only go there during the winter for skiing. They don't go in the summer because there's only lakes. But, okay. And, yeah, I found it interesting, you know, the things I saw there. Very few Americans, very many British. And it's funny, when you go to the Technology Museum in Frankfurt, they feature ham radio on the top floor. And when you go to the top floor, they have a big room. If you can communicate to them somehow ahead, which I don't know how you would do it, they have a big glass room. It's funny because it's all glass, as if you're some kind of zoo animal when you go in there, so people can look at you. And they have a pneumatic-operated mask, and they have a Log periodic antenna. They have the best of everything. And if you make an appointment with them, they'll send a sponsor there, and they'll raise the antenna for you. And